I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
And this is our second installment of our little shorties that we do, where we talk about what has been published on the show this week.
Yeah.
And kind of a little bit more of a relaxed behind-the-scenes discussion of the topic.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Frances Benjamin Johnston, known more colloquially as Fanny, and her astonishing photography career.
It is astonishing.
One of the things that came up in the episode that I thought was maybe worth exploration, but we are working purely off speculation, is the fact that she was clearly, in terms of behavior, very feminist and very much about moving women forward in terms of having careers. And she wrote really detailed, like a how-to, essentially, of how to start a photography career. Uh-huh. But she did not identify as a suffragist or as any part of the women's rights movement as it was happening in the late Victorian and early Edwardian eras.
Did you have any speculation into why that might be?
This is all guesswork. And my only thought is that because she was working in Washington, D.C., and was working with a lot of prominent politicians and was from a family that was very connected to a lot of politicians. Her father, for example, we talked about in the episode, worked for the Treasury Department. My only thought is that she was willing to do like the work on the ground, but she didn't want to make a big statement or stance and potentially ruffle feathers or mess up any of those connections, which were so vital to her career and really her family's well-being. That's my only guess.
Yeah.
But I love her so much because her self-portraits are some of my favorite photographs I have ever seen in my life. They are so fun because it really is like, on the one hand, there's such a wide spectrum of them, which we described some of them on the show, that it almost feels like a kid playing dress-up. Like, it is so many different images of herself as almost entirely different people. But it also is one of those things that reminds you that people are myriad and none of us is any one given identity, right?
Right, right. So, Holly, you did the research and the writing for this episode. And the way our process normally works is that Holly sends me the script and I get the artwork to go with it on our website. That's just sort of one of our division of labor things on the show. And so I had only read like the introduction. And I started a quick search for a photograph to go with it because a lot of times it's kind of a big nebulous thing of, is there going to be a picture for this or not? And the answer is there are thousands of pictures. They're all over. There's a lot of them that are digitized and available on the web. But then I replied back to you having just read that introduction with a link saying, is this the self-portrait you're talking about in this intro? And you were like, yes. And then, of course, once I had read through the whole thing, you described the actual photo. And I was like, well, if I had just hung on for a minute, I would have known the answer to this question.
No worries at all. Yeah, I really, really love the fact that Fanny is one of those rare and unique situations where a lot of her most famous work is at this point more than 120 years old.
Oh, yeah.
But it is still readily available to see online. Anyone can see her work if they have an internet connection. The Library of Congress has the vast majority of her work. There are other libraries and museums that also have some of her work. But, like, in terms of the scope of her work and the amount of it that is digitized,
mm-hmm.
it is better represented online and in terms of accessibility than any other photographer from her era I can think of.
Yeah.
And certainly even better than many artists in terms of things being able to be seen. So if you are curious, especially because she did make that really interesting transition from portraits to architecture and gardens, which mm-hmm. is, to me, a fascinating gear shift to make kind of midway through a very lucrative career, it's interesting to look at how her composition shifts. There is one particular photograph that she took in the state dining room in the White House that is so beautiful to me in terms of light and composition that it reminds me of some of, like, my favorite Dutch Golden Age painters in terms of how they use light to focus the eye. It's really, really pretty. And a lot of her pictures, we talk about it in the episode, she was trained as an artist, so her visual eye is really from that ideology and with that education behind it. So she does tend to create images that look similar in terms of how light is used and how they're framed to the way a painter might. And I love that about them.
So one of the things that we talk about in the episode was the pictures that she took of the Hampton Normal and Agricultural Institute and sort of the evolution of how those have been curated and explored in terms of their content, because they were made sort of as a PR move in a way that was inherently racist because it was about looking at this through a very white lens when they were photos of Black and Native American students. And it really reminded me of a few years ago when you and I were in Chicago, I walked over to the Field Museum and they had this exhibit going on that was about the work of Malvina Hoffman, who had been commissioned to travel the world and make these sculptures of the people she found living in all these places. And the sculptures are beautiful. She took enormous care to try to capture the humanity and the worth of everybody that she was sculpting. But the reason she had been commissioned to do it was for the inherently racist idea of creating a racial hierarchy at which white people were at the top and then curating them that way in the museum. And so this exhibition that I saw in more recent years was sort of looking back, like, how was the Field perpetuating racism with these sculptures? Like, how do we look at the sculptures? How do we look at what the Field was doing with these sculptures? And it really reminded me of the process that those photos sort of went through as people have re-examined how to look at them and how to think about them in their context.
Yeah, that's I mentioned in the episode an article that really breaks down, like, the three primary exhibitions of those and how those ideas shifted. I cannot recommend highly enough that people go check that out. I will make sure in the source list that that is the top one, so it's easy to find. So hopefully people will go and explore and also just take a peek at her photos, which are very fascinating. And like I said, I mean, I'm clearly a very visual thinker. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone who's ever listened to the show for more than 12 minutes. So for me, like, that's such an incredible connection to be able to have to history and how it has all played out, and to look at some of these problematic ideologies that were being executed through art. It's something that's hard to talk about in some ways because you want to consider them as art and from the point of view of an artist who is trying to make something beautiful, but they have meaning and they have import and they have the potential to be very damaging. So it's worthwhile to kind of walk into that discussion with an open mind and really look at those images and think about that write-up and how it breaks them down. So our second episode this week was about the San Francisco earthquake and fire of 1906.
Yep.
which has kind of been lurking on my list for a while. But then because it kept coming up, as I mentioned in that episode, on a recent trip to San Francisco, it felt like the universe was telling me to just stop dithering about and just do it.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I know for me, it's always tricky to decide whether to revisit something that previous hosts did in a shorter treatment. Because, like, yeah, the list of things to talk about is so incredibly long that sometimes it's like, should we? Should we not? Is there enough information beyond what they already said? Like, there's a whole thought process involved.
Oh, for sure. And I went back and re-listened to that one, and I found myself several times, this is kind of my litmus test, I found myself several times going, yeah, yeah, but you left out the part where...
Oh, sure, sure.
Which is probably if there are enough of those. Like, they mentioned that they tried to use fire breaks and that it didn't go well. Mm-hmm. They didn't really discuss why that was a problem or, like, you know, the fact that there was a pivotal figure in the fire department that was out of commission and did not live much longer. So those to me are kind of like the fascinating parts of it. Like, when you understand why something went so poorly, it's to me, a little bit of a richer experience. So that's why I kind of wanted to delve into this, because it's all of that. And as well as the third segment of that episode, where we talk about Chinatown's population and how poorly they were treated, but ultimately, with astonishing just tenaciousness, they were able to reclaim their space in the city and make it very clear that they lived there and it was their home and they belonged as much as anyone, which was, it's a weird story because in some ways it feels very uplifting, but like it's not as though they were suddenly not treated in ways that are racist and gross.
Right.
So it's a mixed bag, but also just an important thing to think about and talk about, because unfortunately most history is like that. Like, it's not... I always say history isn't clean, which is, oh, so, there's no, even the good stories usually have something where you're like, I wish that were not the way it is.
Yeah. Well, and frequently when we have talked about some kind of disaster that displaced a minority group, that has not been how it worked out. It has been that, and then everyone was relocated to a different place and that lucrative land was taken up by white people. Like, that's more often how the story has gone on the show.
Yeah, this one definitely is an outlier, which is part of what makes it so fascinating to me. And again, like, I was ebullient about my love of Chinatown during the episode, but I will say it again. I love Chinatown. It's one of my favorite parts of San Francisco, although I love the whole city. I also love Japantown a whole bunch. I'll basically wander anywhere in that city, and I'm usually pretty happy.
Well, and I'll say for yet another time, because I also said it in the show, that episode from 99% Invisible about the decisions that they made to try to preserve their neighborhood and the, like, the effects that those decisions had both on Chinatown and San Francisco and other places, super interesting to me.
Yeah, there's... also, a thing I wanted to mention, it's in the show notes for the episode, but several years ago, there was an artist who did a series of photographs that are juxtapositional photographs where one half approximately of the image is from this period of devastation when buildings were collapsing or they were on fire. And they kind of blend into scenes that are modern. So you will see someone happily walking down the street with their dog or whatever. And you see that that's the exact place where just a complete devastation of the area had happened at one point. There's one of those pictures that's very hard for me to look at because I'm a wuss, and it's there are several horses that were hit by falling debris and died, mm-hmm. and that's a little bit difficult. So if that's a problem for any of our listeners, maybe don't look at those pictures, but they are really beautifully done. And it's just one of those sobering things where I think it's easy for us to disconnect from the history of our spaces and not think about what has gone before in the places where we walk and buy groceries and do everyday, seemingly mundane things. But those are places where really important stories have played out, whether there is evidence of them there before us or not. So to me, that's kind of what I really love about those pictures. And I encourage anybody to go take a peek at them.
Cool. So... that probably wraps it up for this week.
I would say so, yes. If people want to write to us, they can do that at historypodcast@houseofworks.com. You can subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, at Apple Podcasts, anywhere else you get your podcasts. And you can always visit us online at mistinhistory.com.
It's
Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.